Welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, your conference co-host. Today, I'm speaking with Melody Wilding, an award-winning psychology at work expert and best-selling author of two books, Trust Yourself, Stop Overthinking and Channel Your Emotions for Success at Work, and Managing Up. Named one of Business Insider's most innovative coaches, her clients include CEOs, C-level execs, and managers at top Fortune 500 companies. Melody is a licensed social worker with a master's from Columbia and a professor of human behavior at Hunter College. Melody Wilding, thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
So the only thing that more than 30 years of working has taught me is that everybody has a boss and everyone works for someone. And managing that relationship doesn't necessarily come naturally to us, and no one really teaches us how to do it. So in your new book, am I right that you call this managing up?
That's correct. Yes. Influencing your boss's behavior or the behavior of other people above you on the hierarchy.
And I don't think, you know, and I think you and I have actually talked about this phenomenon where like sometimes people do a really great job at a particular occupation, like sales or marketing or whatever, and they get promoted to be in charge of other people that do a great job at that. And it doesn't necessarily make them great managers. So that's kind of the top down, but we're talking more about the bottom up. So how do you protect your agency and your time and your ambition and things like that? How do you manage up to the people that are in power above you and managing you or making decisions on behalf of you? And this can often give people a fair amount of anxiety, which is completely understandable. So why does it make us anxious, and why doesn't anyone teach us how to do this?
Well, first I want to back up because I love what you said about the purpose of managing up. At the end of the day, it's actually not so much about your boss. It's about your own level of satisfaction and confidence and feeling of control and having freedom over your work. So I think that's a shift I want people to embrace right off the bat, that managing up is for you, something you want to do for yourself. And it's not something you only do when you have a toxic or a bad manager. This is good practice. Even if you have a good relationship with your boss, it can always be better. So I want to put that out there. And that said, yes, it is very anxiety provoking because, as you said, no one teaches us to do this. We focus a lot on technically being good at our jobs, going to school, getting the degree and the experience that we need, but we're never taught how do we navigate the relationships around us. And so much of that comes down to understanding human behavior and relationship dynamics, which is also where much of the anxiety comes in. Because of course, when we're talking about managing up to superiors, there's power dynamics that come into play. And for many of us, our upbringing can affect how we perceive those dynamics, how you look at authority figures. Are they know-all be-all type people? Are they not to be trusted? Are people in authority people you can't challenge? So your upbringing, how you related to your parents or other authority figures in your life, teachers, coaches, also your cultural background can come into play. Some cultures, it's very ingrained and it's just part of the culture that you don't challenge the hierarchy. You're deferential. And when you bring all of that into the workplace, you put that on top of maybe past negative experiences that you've had with a manager or an overbearing boss, then the anxiety about, I don't want to overstep. I don't want to upset someone. I don't want to offend my boss, and that jeopardizes my job. So all of that goes into the anxiety mix around managing up.
Absolutely. Well said. Yeah, all of those factors, as you were thinking, I was thinking of all the ones that I have, and I'm sure other people were kind of ticking off those boxes of like, oh, this is kind of how I've built my, you know, professional relationship arsenal or Rolodex or whatever, kind of, you know, like these are the skills that I've learned and how I apply them. And it's so interesting too, because do you find that you can be really good at, like my big joke about like maternity leave, which I didn't have, it was just unemployment with a baby, right? But once I went back to work, I was like, everyone here listens to me and does what I ask. And like, I had this like power trip where I was like, no one's yelling at me while I'm trying to eat my lunch. And like, you know, so you can have these roles too, where I'm really great at, you know, managing a household and people respect my opinion. And then I go into a workplace and everybody treats me like I'm an idiot or worthless or don't understand the basics of like time management and organization, or I'm being micromanaged. And so I think it's such a great point that you make about that this isn't about the people that we're speaking to who are in charge of us or the hierarchies that we can't necessarily do anything to change. This is about us and making sure that we're clear on what our boundaries need to be, advocating for what we need in order to be not only the most valued, but the most seen and the most rewarded for our talents and our value. Obviously, all of us have value inherently. But in this capitalistic society that we all live in, we also have to, you know, pay our bills. And so making sure that that value is also seen at work. So how are the actual ways? So now that we know the contributing factors, what does it look like? What might people feel? What might people say? How might they behave when they're experiencing this type of anxiety?
Yeah, I think it breaks down to your actions, your mindset, and your physical state. So in terms of actions, you may hold back your opinions because you don't want them to be dismissed or criticized. You may avoid communicating directly. So you may share tough feedback or tough information in an email because you want to avoid the confrontation. I also see a lot of people get into checking communication frequently. So they're constantly sort of refreshing, did my boss respond? Did my boss respond? Or they may excessively need validation. They don't want to take ownership or step out of line. So they're always waiting for approval or a blessing from their manager to do something. And then we get into, so that's actions. We get into mindset. You may catastrophize outcomes. So you may think that if you have to give your boss tough news, that it's going to be the worst possible outcome. They're going to scream at you and fire you right on the spot. You may overthink your interactions as well. Should I say X or should I say Y? Which one are they going to respond to? And of course, being strategic and thoughtful is good. But when all of these behaviors go to an extreme, that's where it becomes anxiety, where it becomes debilitating, or it holds you back from you showing up confidently and fully. And then last is the physicality, because of course, as both of us know, anxiety really manifests in your physical body. That's why so many somatic practices are great for anxiety. You may start sweating when you have a one-on-one with your boss. Your heart may start racing when you feel you have to present an idea to them, or you go blank. You actually go into a freeze state where your frontal cortex is shutting down. You're reacting for more of the lower, the emotional and reactive parts of your brain. And you literally can't concentrate. You don't have access to some of that good thinking that comes from that frontal part of your brain.
And that's so perfect, because I think everybody can identify one of those three areas that might be where they tend to go to the most, or maybe they go to that the most in different situations. Like if you have to physically be in somebody's presence, that might cue more, or if you're on camera, like we both are now, that might cue more physical symptoms. My mindset, the actions, like, oh my God, I can relate to all of these. And have, you know, changed and modified a lot of these things for myself as well. And so when you're speaking with somebody, do you find that they tend to fall into one of these three categories, or that all people have kind of some in each one of them?
It depends. I would say more often is some of the mental struggles. And then when things get a little bit more extreme, that's where I start to see some of the physical manifestations as well, because now it's come to a point where you've run through this pattern so many times that your body's actually having a physical reaction to it. But you said something important that I want to underscore, which is that you were able to change some of these reactions for yourself. And that gets at an important message I want everyone to hear, which is that you teach people how to treat you. You teach people how to treat you. It's so important. If you are approaching your boss with meekness because you're insecure, you set a boundary, but then you immediately go back on it and say, but don't worry, it's okay. I can work extra. It's no problem. Then you are teaching people that your words, your communication, your time is not to be respected. Yet when you come to the table with clear preferences, a clear idea, not in an arrogant, aggressive way, but just in a grounded, objective, matter-of-fact way, you can meet your boss almost more like a peer. And people respond. People respond to that groundedness that you have. So I just say that because I think with these types of relationships, it can feel like I just have to take what I'm given. And people don't realize that they have more power than they might assume to shape the dynamics around them.
And I want to get into some of the specific tactics around how to, you know, heal or change some of these behaviors in a minute. But I also want to just talk about that you can have these, or at least in my experience, you can have these manifest in either cycles of your life or in cycles of your employment, right? So I remember when I was in my 20s, you know, and something you said cued this for me, which is like, I feel like I just have to take it. Like that was the decade of my 20s. It was like, whatever was happening, I was just going to have to take it because I was in my 20s. And that's just what people in their 20s do. I don't think people in their 20s have that attitude anymore. And I applaud them for that. So you've got, and I felt like I was like collecting experiences in order to give myself this false sense of control over like, okay, now I've learned from that situation. I'll never make that exact mistake again. And I can like future-proof myself against difficulty or discomfort, which, wow, what a fantasy world we live in our 20s, right? So like there is no way out of having uncomfortable situations arise in the workplace because you can only control yourself, right?
Very true. Unfortunately, very true. But as you said, you learn a little bit more through each of those experiences. You learn more, and we'll talk about this in a moment, but you learn more about what your boss responds to and what their needs are. You learn more about the type of person you do want to work for or don't want to work for. And so each of those experiences, yes, they're tough, and many times things actually become more complex as you rise through the ranks because your boss is different demands. You may now many people are in an environment where they're reporting to multiple leaders, not just one person, but multiple because they're in a matrix environment, for example, or the organization is more flat. And so, yes, I think also telling ourselves, getting into that fallacy of once I do this, I'll be over that and I never have to face it again, also sets us up for more anxiety, because then we struggle and then we judge ourselves more rather than realizing this is a normal part of growing in your career, is that your relationships are going to evolve, the stakes are going to change, and with that are going to come new challenges. So I think that's a great point about also adjusting your own, calibrating your own expectations.
Yeah. And I want to reemphasize that in what you said, because I think that really surprised me also in that I've pivoted my career a lot. And at each pivot, it felt like I was starting from scratch and learning this about myself and reassuring myself. Like, and I finally now gotten to the point where like every new experience, I'm like, wow, it makes sense that you're a little bit nervous and that you've fallen back into comfortable patterns, behaviors, thoughts, and actions, because the situation is new and the stakes feel higher, or it feels less comfortable and less familiar. It will go away. We're going to practice what we've done before. This will get more familiar, and with the familiarity comes the comfort, and like you will, right? But I think people get, especially when they get into managerial positions or maybe executive positions, they're like, why am I feeling like this? I've been in this career for 20 or 30 years. This is ridiculous. Why am I now like displaying all these patterns I would have when I was insecure and young?
There's a phrase, new level, new devil, which is new level, new challenges. But many times I find it's new level, same devil, just in different yeah. clothes that are many times, especially those of us that struggle with anxiety or have had big T or little T trauma, we find these patterns come up again, the same insecurities surface. And that doesn't mean you're never over them, but it means you're uncovering new layers and new nuances to how you heal, how you grow from them.
Yeah. And I'm sure it can be frustrating for people, right? Because you're like, I've done all this work and I got into this place. Was this a mistake, right? Then you're second guessing yourself. Maybe I wasn't ready for this. I think, like you said, people with trauma and anxiety, that self-questioning starts to happen. But I think you would agree with me. And I just want people to hear that, no, it actually makes a lot of sense that you would have these feelings or behaviors or thoughts again. And that you get quicker and quicker with the tools that we're going to discuss in a second with coping with those and getting yourself out of those patterns. Would you say that's true?
100%. I am always saying to my clients, the goal is not to never experience struggle. That's unrealistic. You're going to set yourself up for disappointment if you do that. But to your point, the goal is around decreasing your response and your recovery time. And so can we decrease the delta, you know, the percent of change between the time it takes you to fall down that spiral and the time when you are able to feel back in control, for example.
Absolutely. All right. So what are the techniques that you recommend for preparing mentally and emotionally before engaging in conversations about managing up?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people think managing up is about asserting yourself, is about telling your boss what you want and dictating the relationship. Really, it's much, much more about listening, observing, and paying attention. Because in order to manage up effectively, you have to have a better understanding of your manager. So really spending time asking them, learning about their communication style, their preferences for receiving updates, the best time to have discussions with them, how they like to give and receive feedback, what their goals, priorities, vision for the team or your projects are. And this isn't about kissing up. I think a lot of people automatically equate managing up with kissing up, but this is about uncovering unspoken expectations, rules, needs, motivations that your boss has, so that number one, you have a baseline to better understand their behavior. And when my clients do this, it almost instantly erases 85% of the things they're overthinking, that they're anxious about. Because if you understand that your boss is a very concise, brief communicator who wants things right to the point, who would prefer bullet points rather than a full-length report, well, that takes away a lot of the questioning when they send you a really curt email. You know that I didn't do something wrong. This is just their style. You can put it in perspective and not blame yourself and worry about that. And when you understand what their goals, priorities, what their vision is, how their success is measured by their own boss, then you're also able to pitch your ideas, to frame your proposals to them in a way that speak to how what you're proposing helps actually accomplish those goals. So again, it's about finding more of a symbiotic relationship of how can I help my boss be more successful and in turn make myself more successful and make my life more stress-free and easier and have there be less conflict rather than just how do I please them and respond to their every need.
Absolutely. Gosh. And it goes both ways too, right? Like you can advocate to your boss about how you want to be communicated with. And I'll give a small example of this that always makes Alex Howard laugh, the founder of our company. It just got really dark. It's going to storm any minute. So I just want to give people context that like, I did not lose electricity. It just got very dark here. The founder of our company, Conscious Life, is a big fan of the voice memo. I am not a big fan of the voice memo.
And you and I have talked about this.
Yeah. Yes. And on platforms where it will transcribe the voice memo, I'm like, great, I can read it. But on platforms where I have to listen and take notes, I basically was just like, no, I'm not. If you send me a voice memo, I'm not listening to it anymore. Like, It turns out it won't get, whatever that important thing was, it won't get done. Now, if you just want to call and like brainstorm some things out, you know, open-ended, like, great, let's do that back and forth. I'll know it's not urgent. But if it's something that's urgent or important or is going to require me to take notes, like, that's not how I'm best communicated. And I don't feel like my time is respected. And I'll tell you what, he totally understands and never sends them to me unless it's absolutely impossible to do it any other way. And so you can also advocate for yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was actually going to be my next tip, is that this goes both ways. And just as you want to understand your boss's preferences, you also, there's a little bit of homework we all have to do here for ourselves, is how can someone best work with me? How do I learn best? How, if someone has feedback they want to give me, what do I want to hear? Some people will say, actually, tell me what's working well up front. And I have other clients who will say, I want to know immediately what needs to be fixed. Don't, you know, don't dance around it. Just tell me immediately, get right into it. And what you were saying, it comes from the framing of, Alex, I want you to be able to get the best out of me, and I want our relationship to be successful. Here's what would help us do that. How can we meet in the middle? That's the approach you want to be coming from, is, again, coming from that place of strength, not just, you know, cowering to whatever your boss wants.
Yeah. And I'll give everybody a little bit of, because I kept Melody in mind when this situation came up, I'll give everybody a little behind the scenes in a much higher stakes situation. Also, you know, inside baseball for Conscious Life. I was the CEO of this organization for 2 full years. And it became very, very clear to me about a calendar year ago that I no longer wanted to serve in that role. And it was very, very much for the betterment of the company, not because I was doing a poor job necessarily, but because we have a worldwide company in several different time zones, mine of which is like the last time zone. And in full transparency, I don't really like being a CEO. I like doing interviews. I like being creative. It's not my wheelhouse of genius, that, and also enjoyment. But I will tell you, even though there's a ton of respect between Alex and I, and I had a lot of confidence in my value at the company, that conversation was terrifying, like terrifying. And not because he's scary. It was just like to come to the conclusion of like what I needed and wanted, what was going to be best and serve the company long-term. And I was really, really confident in that. And then to actually communicate it and ask for it, knowing full well that there was a possibility that I would end up without a job at the end of the conversation, wasn't easy. And so I don't want people to get the idea that this is like, just understand the bullet points your boss needs to make. And I don't think that that's what you're saying at all. Mm-hmm. But that this is, we understand that people's employment is important to them for their livelihood, for their, you know, everyday comfort, for the needs of the people that they care for in their family. It's not an easy thing to do, to advocate for yourself in a way that retains respect between both parties, right?
Not at all. And unfortunately, in many workplaces, it's not always safe. And so I have some situations with a few clients right now where their manager may not be that supportive, and they're having to find other people that have a position of power, whether it's a boss's peer, their skip level, a leader or manager in another department, who can be that source of support for them, who can open up opportunities, doors, endorse their work. And so another phrase I'm always saying to my clients is, don't go to the hardware store looking for milk, which means in the case of a manager, that you may not have a manager who's able to give you the sort of coaching, mentoring, feedback that you want. And you, or it may not be safe to get it from that person, right? And so you may have to find other routes to get that, whether it's other people in your organization or even externally through an accountability group, a membership organization. So no, it's not simple. It's not easy. And it also takes time. Look for low stakes situations first. You know, the first time you try to set a boundary or speak up to your boss, should not be when it's a really high profile project that's due in the next 24 hours. That is not the right time to do some of the things we're talking about. You want to find little, small opportunities so that you're building your own confidence, but you're also getting your manager used to interacting with you in a different way.
Absolutely. Great tips. And it brings up too that, like, how do you manage the boundaries and hierarchy? Like, it's such a delicate dance of, especially when you were talking about kind of horizontal support or maybe managers in other departments that can advocate for you or mentor you. People can get very touchy about their power and hierarchy structures in small and large organizations. And so how do you advise people around assessing those situations and making those moves carefully?
Yeah. You know, you also have to recognize what is your own power base. And so you may have more leverage the longer you've been in an organization. If you are working on projects that are really mission critical or very close to the bottom line, those types of things give you more pushback power. They give you more clout and social capital, as do having allies, having a background or an expertise that no one else in the organization has. So you also have to consider some of those intangibles. When it actually comes to starting to push back, this is where, again, understanding your boss's priorities comes into play. Because if you're having those conversations regularly, let's say that your boss comes to you and says, I want you to take on this piece of extra work. And you are thinking to yourself, I have no idea how I'm going to fit this in. Many people I work with anxiety will internalize that and say, I'll figure it out. A regular person should be able to do this. So I should be able to do this. Let me figure it out. And then they just try to buckle down. They burn themselves out doing so. What's much better to do is to ask clarifying questions before you accept. Not to be insubordinate, but to push back gently on the urgency, the relevance of the request. So you might ask, can I understand the timeline behind this and what's driving the urgency? You can ask, can you tell me how you see this fitting in with my other priorities? Or do you see this being a one-off exception or becoming a regular part of my work? So don't just automatically accept, nudge a little to try to understand where it's coming from, what's behind it. And then from there, another tactic I love to give my clients is to offer alternatives. So because of the power dynamics when you're managing up, sometimes you cannot outright just say, no, I'm not doing that. I'm too busy. I'm not doing that. You have to find a way to make it work, but you're also human. So how do you balance those two things? You offer an alternative. So you might say, I'm not able to get everything you asked for by Friday, but I can get you this piece of it. And so you're negotiating with the deadline, which again, pushes back gently to say, the subtext of what you're saying is this is not realistic. However, I'm willing to work with you on this and I can deliver this one piece of work, but not everything else you're asking for. You can also offer, perhaps there's someone else who is a better fit for the task that you're willing to train up. For example, a member of your team or even a member of another team. There may be times where you have to put it back, put the onus on them to make a trade-off, to say, in our last one-on-one, you mentioned project A was the top priority. That's what I heard from you. Now I'm also hearing that project B is important. I understand that. However, what would you like me to deprioritize or slow down on in order to make room for both of these things? Since tackling both of them in the timeline you're suggesting is not possible. So you put the authority back on to them to have to make that trade-off.
Absolutely. These are really good tips. And I want to make sure that people understand too, that when we talked earlier about the small, like small wins and small, like low urgency, low importance, kind of like where you can find those opportunities to try this and grow your confidence. And do you find with people that, that their confidence and energy kind of exponentially grow the more that they do this?
Yes, even if it doesn't go exactly as you have expected, because another Melodyism that I'm always saying to my clients is you build confidence with yourself in proportion with the number of promises you keep to yourself. So if you are saying that it's important to me that I advocate for myself, it's important to me that I feel like I can hold my own with people in power, but you're not taking actions that are consistent with that, it's a small form of self-betrayal. And my first book is called Trust Yourself. And this is one of the reasons why, that you can only control your behavior. You can only control the fact that you spoke up, you push back, you ask for clarification. You cannot control how and if someone responds in kind. And so, yes, I do find that even when you take the steps to be courageous, to put yourself out there, it's frustrating when you don't get the response you hoped for back, but it still builds your sense of competence. And every time it's also building your skill set. You're getting better at being able to stay calm and composed on the spot, even when someone may be getting a little worked up with you. You build your skills at being able to negotiate and have hard conversations. And even just that alone, there's wins and there's success to celebrate within that.
Absolutely. You said that so well. And I can remember distinctly, like at the beginning of my anxiety journey, remembering the wins that I would count as like, I survived the discomfort of that situation. Like that I would literally celebrate like, oh my God, that was so uncomfortable. And even if it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to, I didn't get what I wanted, or I didn't feel, I was like, I survived asking for that or not immediately jumping in to solve the problem that was presented that everyone assumed I would take responsibility for, or like just surviving, like, oh my God, I made it through. I tolerated it. God, I want to give that girl a hug, right?
Yeah. Distress tolerance is such an important anxiety management skill. And as you were saying, most of us respond to the feelings of internal discomfort by, let me people please, let me overwork, let me find a way I can soothe over this discomfort in a way that ends up being a form of self-sabotage. But as you were saying, learning to be with it, to surf it, to not react to it in counterproductive ways, that really builds your sense of trust in yourself.
Yeah. And I really want people to hear that, like, it exponentially builds. And when you start reclaiming that energy and start building your confidence and trust in yourself, it's like a snowball down a mountain, and you start to feel really confident and powerful, and you just know yourself better. And I also want to say that, like, the circumstances of my life don't look that different. I think about that all the time, how amusing it is that the circumstances of my life have not changed much in my long healing journey. But the way I feel in my circumstances has changed 180 degrees, right? Mm-hmm. How I feel about myself, how I feel about my work and my value as a human being has dramatically changed. So I am wealthy in that regard because of people like you.
Well, thank you. That's very kind.
Melody, if people want to hear more about you and your work and your books, how can they do that?
You can find me and all of my work at my website, melodywilding.com. More information about my first book, Trust Yourself, and my second book there as well.
And the second book is called Managing Up, right?
That's correct. Managing Up, How to Get What You Need from the People in Charge.
Oh, fantastic title. Melody, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.